to know about the COVID-19 vaccines? What do you want to know about the COVID-19 vaccines? Vaccination is ongoing, of course. Some of us have already been vaccinated. If you watched on Wednesday, I think, you saw me show you footage of myself getting vaccinated. If you didn't see it, well, I'm showing it to you one more time so that you see that, yes, I really did get vaccinated. Nigeria Info 99.3. That's where we're streaming live. Nigeria Info 99.3 on Facebook, Nigeria Info FM on YouTube. Now, some people have not gotten vaccinated. Some are saying that they will not get vaccinated. Some, like Frank, are saying, I'll wait for all of you to finish getting vaccinated first. But slowly but surely, the world is inching towards getting enough people jabbed to get COVID under control. And that brings me to today's big heart fact. According to our World in Data, 552 million people worldwide have been vaccinated against COVID-19. That's one out of every 15 people on Earth, which is pretty impressive if you think about it. One in 15 people on Earth. It's pretty impressive, huh? Now, here in Nigeria, we have vaccinated 500,000 people. I'm one of them. Yay. But we still have a long way to go. And we're not going to get there if you don't get vaccinated. But I know that a lot of you are hesitating to get vaccinated because you are worried about some of the stories, some of the theories, some of the myths that you've been hearing about the vaccines. And I know that it's not enough to hear me tell you every day that the vaccines are safe. After all, I'm not a doctor, right? I'm not a scientist, right? So that's why I said today I'm going to bring you an expert that you can trust to give you more information about the vaccines and also to help clear your concerns. Joining me is the hero of the quest for a vaccine. He's one of the scientists who worked on the trials for the Pfizer vaccine. He's an associate professor at Yale University in the United States. He's joining us from the States today, Dr. Onyema Obuagu. Welcome back to Hard Facts.
Thank you, Sandra. Nice to be back.
Yes, Lagos, we want to hear from you as well as we continue the conversation. If you've got questions for Dr. Obuagu about the COVID vaccines or about vaccine development period, you can give us a call. 01-465-7190. That's for women. 01-465-7190. That's our line for women. Our line for men, 0700-993-993-993. 0700-993-993-993. Dr. Obuagu, the first time that you were here, the vaccines had only just started being administered generally, but it's been almost 2 months. Have you guys been getting more clinical data from the public? What's that data telling you about the vaccines?
Yeah, so the last time we were here, it's been a couple of months, mm-hmm. and I think that was when the messenger RNA vaccines were probably the first wave of vaccines, mm-hmm. so the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Mm-hmm. And then since then, there have been, you know, two other vaccines mm-hmm. that have come to prominence, which are the viral vector vaccines, mm-hmm. AstraZeneca mm-hmm. and Johnson & Johnson, which we just got approved in the U.S., right. And actually another third platform, which is a protein-based vaccine, which is the Novavax. So it's amazing how, you know, we've had three different vaccine approaches mm-hmm. performed very well in field testing and the clinical trials, showing that they're very effective in protecting against the disease. Now, here's something I really want to emphasize.
Right.
So even though the effectiveness in preventing all forms of the disease, it differs or is different between the different types of vaccines,
mm-hmm.
one thing that's common to all these approaches is that they all uniformly, with very, very high levels of efficacy, protect against severe disease, mm-hmm. critical illness, and death, and in many cases, hospitalizations,
mm-hmm.
so that you're pretty much guaranteed, regardless of the type of vaccine that mm-hmm. you take,
mm-hmm.
that you will be protected against getting seriously ill, going to the hospital, and dying of the disease.
Right.
And then what's been most gratifying, though, because remember, the two questions we had to answer with the clinical trials were, are the vaccines safe
mm-hmm.
and are they effective?
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing from real-world data. So this is no longer clinical trials. This is real-world
yes,
data.
Exactly.
As you know, both in Israel, in the United Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
and in the United States, that these vaccines are just working great. In fact, Israel even reported efficacy numbers of about, what was it, 97% efficacy, okay. Right, against symptomatic disease in people who had been vaccinated, which was even higher than the point estimate we had in the clinical trial of 95%. Mm. So just to summarize, I think that it's been reassuring and gratifying mm-hmm. to see that the real-world experience has matched, if not exceeded in some cases, mm-hmm. what we saw in the clinical trials, and I think that's good for the world.
I saw some good news from the CDC today. They're saying that a single dose of the Pfizer vaccine has been shown to be 80% effective. Did this good result come as a surprise, or was there already an expectation that the vaccine worked better than reported in phase 3?
No, so that's great. Yeah, so we did know that the first dose of the vaccine does protect people against the disease. Mm-hmm. In the clinical trial, we found a 52%. Mm-hmm. But like I told you, in some of the real-world studies, they're finding as high as 80% protection right. against disease. But remember that you really maximize the efficacy of the vaccine after receiving the second dose. Mm-hmm. We do think that that boost that you get from the second shot is critical, mm-hmm. not just to maximize the efficacy of the vaccine, mm-hmm. but also we think it contributes to how long protection that it provides. So mm-hmm. I just want to get the word out so that people don't feel comfortable taking one dose of the vaccine and running away. I think there's clearly value to getting that second dose for much more longer and more robust protection. Mm. One other point I want to make, there are some populations that respond less to vaccines. Okay. So these could be older individuals. We saw some data from Johns Hopkins University about transplant patients having lower rates of responding to the vaccine in regards to producing antibodies. Okay. I am currently doing a trial for HIV-infected patients to see how well they respond to the messenger RNA vaccines. Mm. You know, and, you know, preliminarily, we're seeing that not everybody responds to the first dose mm-hmm. by producing detectable antibodies. So, you know, I'll put a word of caution that I think, again, especially for individuals who have immune-compromised mm-hmm. systems mm-hmm. due to either medications or underlying medical conditions, mm-hmm. you really want to get the second dose. And I know Nigeria got the AstraZeneca vaccine right. and almost 4 million doses the first wave.
Yeah.
And I'd really encourage everyone to get that second dose. It's really important.
Okay. Now, of course, we have the new variants of the virus popping up. How have the vaccines fared against them?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a mixed picture. I think of all the variants, so we know that we have the UK variant, and I know there's a variant in Nigeria that's close to having some of the mutations that the UK variant has. But the one we're most concerned is the variant that was identified in South Africa. It has a certain mutation that's associated with decreased susceptibility to some of the antibodies that mm-hmm. the vaccines produce. Mm-hmm. But what we're finding as well is that even for the variant in mm-hmm. South Africa, mm-hmm. that if you're vaccinated and you get that strain, mm-hmm. yes, you can have symptoms, but it still provides protection mm-hmm. against getting severely ill mm. and dying from the disease. That mm. said, we saw that the AstraZeneca trial in South Africa was halted because that particular vaccine did not protect against mild and moderate disease, mm. right? There was very low efficacy, so that trial was halted. Mm-hmm. But again, we think it should still provide some protection against the more severe forms of the disease. Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, we've now studied the Johnson & Johnson in that setting. We've studied Novavax as well in that setting. So, mm-hmm. you know, there are vaccines that still work against the variants. But the message I want to put out here is that variants continue to arise only if there's circulating virus. Mm-hmm. So more than ever, there's a race here between trying to vaccinate away to the end of the pandemic, mm-hmm. or if we're just too slow with that or we do that ineffectively, mm-hmm. then we run the risk that there'll be even more variants arising in the future mm-hmm. that may even be more problematic for vaccines. So we're all holding our breath to see who wins in the end. And I hope that we can vaccinate our way through it rather than have to deal with, you know, upcoming variants that remain problematic.
Lagos, if you're just tuned in, you're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Joining me on the show today is a scientist who worked on the Pfizer vaccine. He's an associate professor at Yale University in the United States. His name is Dr. Onyema Obuago. Started off here in Nigeria, actually, University of Calabar. If you've got questions, please go ahead and call and ask those questions. 0700-993-993-993. That's for men. For women, 0701-465-7190. What questions do you have about vaccines? What are some of the things you've heard that you'd like the good doctor to clarify for you? 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. We've got Vincent in Lekki up first. Hello, Vincent. Good to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sandra, for having me. And Prof, good evening by Lagos time. Thank you for the work you've done behind to save mankind, to save the world. On Friday, I was fortunate to get the vaccine. That was the first dose, AstraZeneca, in Lagos. You know, but after some hours, I started feeling very, very bad. You know, it's as if I got the COVID. I have to make calls and everything. It was actually very bad, the cold, the heat, the body pain, you know, the headache, everything. You know, at some point, I was very afraid. And it happened for 24 good hours. You know, but right now I'm fine. You know, I just wanted to know whether that was normal or whether that was myself alone. I took it. My driver also took it. And my driver couldn't even drive to the destination. You know, I have to take the steering for him when he was feeling very, very weak. And I wanted you to talk about it. And at least to allay the fear of a lot of my friends that have been saying that they will not get the vaccine.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling. I also experienced the same thing, but I'll let the doctor talk about it. Vincent, thank you very much for calling. Dr. Boagun.
Yeah, thank you, Vincent. That's a very good question. And I think an easy answer to your question is you're very normal. Having side effects like that after receiving the vaccine, and I love the way you described it because that's exactly how it is expected. So typically these side effects start to happen in sometimes a couple of hours after the vaccine. They peak usually a day or two after the vaccine and go away very quickly. And those are what we call, you know, reactogenicity or, you know, responses to the vaccine. What happens is that that's just your body responding to the vaccine antigen and starting to produce, you know, antibodies or, you know, to in response to the vaccine. So in some sense, it's actually a good thing that you did feel that because that's one of the signs that the vaccine is kicking in and it's working. And the symptoms you described are classic. They're flu-like, influenza-like symptoms or common cold-type symptoms. So, you know, fevers, headache, body aches, muscle aches, sometimes bleeding, joint pains that last for a very short period of time and go away pretty quickly. So, you know, expect that to occur and sometimes even a little more after the second vaccine. So one thing I do advise people is that because the chance of having some of those very short-lived reactions to the vaccine, you want to plan. So that's especially, like you said, if you had a driver who had to drive a couple of hours, especially if it's a long trip, you want to plan for that. Same thing for people who maybe have to be at jobs that require their full attention the next day. It's always good to think about scheduling your vaccine maybe over a weekend or Friday so you can have the weekend. So that way you can ride them out and do fine. But there's nothing to worry about. You had a normal reaction, and that's a good sign that your body is taking the vaccine and you're on your path to being protected against the virus.
All right, let's talk to Rosaline Inikoyi. Hello, Rosaline. Thank you for calling us.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Sandra,
yes.
I wanted to know if a pregnant woman can take the vaccine. Secondly, I want to know if children can take it. My baby is 4 years, and third, I want to know if I get vaccinated, will I still have the COVID? Or I just want you to clarify that. My question.
All right, Rosaline, thank you very much for calling. So, doctor, can pregnant women take the vaccine? If she takes the vaccine, will she still get COVID? And can her baby, who is 4 years old, take the vaccine?
Yeah, thank you, Rosaline. That was a great question. So let me try to answer them one after the other. So none of the vaccines that you have available to you cause COVID. I want to be very clear about that. So the AstraZeneca uses another virus that's tweaked so that it can't replicate or divide. Okay, so it shouldn't cause clinical symptoms, and it just carries the gene for the spike protein of the coronavirus. So the vaccines do not contain the COVID virus, and they cannot make you have COVID. I want to be very clear about that. Hmm. The second thing is that we now have increasing evidence that the vaccines remain safe in pregnancy.
Okay.
In all of the clinical trials, even the AstraZeneca trial, women got pregnant on the study, and we haven't seen anything occur in those pregnancies that have occurred at a rate that are any different from pregnant women who did not get the vaccine. For the Pfizer Moderna vaccines, we have animal studies that show that it does not affect fertility and it doesn't have any adverse impact on reproductive outcomes. More than, it was 30,000 women in the US a while ago, maybe it's even more, have already received COVID vaccines during pregnancy and we're following them and we haven't heard of any adverse pregnancy outcomes to date. So, and then on the flip side, if you get COVID and you're pregnant, you have a higher rate of being hospitalized, a higher rate of going on a mechanical ventilator, and a higher rate of dying.
But that's the thing. The Nigerian health centers are refusing to vaccinate pregnant women. Because I remember I went to get vaccinated and they kept asking me over and over, are you pregnant? And they kept announcing to the women there, if you're pregnant, go home. This vaccine is not for you.
What I think should happen is that providers or vaccinators should have a conversation with pregnant women, letting them know what we know and what we don't know about that, and giving pregnant women the option to decide. You know, on my part, I would strongly recommend, given the risks of having COVID-19, that pregnant women should be vaccinated. And actually, there's a two-for-one deal there, because we're seeing that women are actually passing along their antibodies to the kids. So at least early on, there's some chance that vaccinated women could pass along antibodies that protect their newborns against their pregnancy. There's at least been two studies, one from Israel and one from the US, that have shown that data, which is really exciting. Then the last point you asked was about kids. For the Pfizer vaccine trial, we've studied up down to age 12, and we're working on a protocol to study from newborn all through less than age 11. So some of those trials in younger kids, like your four-year-old kids, are ongoing. But we don't think we're going to have results in those individuals till probably either later part of the year or early part of 2022. So it may be a while before we have kids as young as yours. But I think for kids age 12 and above, I think that very soon there will start to be options for that group.
We've got Naomi in Lekki on the line. Hello, Naomi. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Good to have you on the show. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I need, if the doctor can, explain to me what an RNA vaccine is and how this is different from the traditional vaccines we get.
All right. So what's an RNA vaccine and how is it different from the traditional vaccines we get? Yes?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right, Naomi. Thank you very much for calling. Doctor?
Hi, Naomi. Thanks for your question. So RNA vaccines actually have the work for RNA vaccines has really been decades in the making, and some of the first trials, animal trials, were in the 1990s. It's been studied for conditions like rabies, influenza, and even HIV in some of the early phase studies. And obviously, that technology has advanced to the point where it was ready for prime time when the SARS-CoV-2 virus, the cause of COVID-19, became available. RNA technology is really simple. So your body uses RNA. Think of it as a code that makes you produce a specific protein. So you can make RNA for the body to produce any kind of protein target that you want. And so it was very clear from the prior SARS infection. Remember, there was the SARS, I think in 2003, right? Where we knew that the spike protein was what the virus used to cause problems, which is how it attaches to cells and starts the infection. So it became clear that if you wanted people to develop immunity against any part of the virus, you wanted to do it against the spike protein. And so the mRNA encodes for the spike protein. So when you get the mRNA vaccine, your body reads off the mRNA to produce the spike protein, and that primes the immune system so that when you have the virus that has the spike protein, you already have antibodies to fight the virus and keep the vaccine from establishing the virus from establishing an infection. The mRNA is read off in the outer part of the cell, what we call the cytoplasm. It doesn't get into the nucleus. The nucleus is that center and core that houses DNA. So it doesn't interfere with DNA. It's in the outer part of the cell. The mRNA lasts, you know, few hours. In a day or two, it's out of your system, but just enough time for it to prime your immune system to protect you against the virus. So, you know, I predict that mRNA vaccines have started with COVID-19, and we're going to hear of so many more vaccines in the future for different infectious diseases, because I think we've learned a smart and a safe way to protect people against infectious pathogens.
You know, there is some talk about the vaccines having a worse effect on people who have had COVID than on people who have not. Some people are even saying that. So this is me following unofficial data from social media, right? So you've got some people who say that they've had COVID before and that when they took the vaccines, they had really terrible side effects, you know, almost kind of like they were having COVID all over again. And then you have people who have never had COVID and then they take the vaccine and they have no side effects whatsoever. They are maybe just hungry, like really hungry, very ravenous. I've seen lots of reports of people who are very, very ravenous after taking the vaccine. Is there some merit to that talk, or is it, coincidental information?
No. So remember that when someone has COVID-19, your body produces antibodies to it. So we always had that question, if you've had COVID-19 and you get a vaccine, what does the vaccine do to you? Mm-hmm. So we already have some evidence that even the first dose of a vaccine, mm-hmm. I think the study was looking at the Pfizer vaccine,
right,
that people who get who've had COVID before, mm-hmm. who get the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine, mm-hmm. their antibody levels that they produce mm-hmm. are many times higher than people who did not have COVID who completed the two-dose series. So in other words, for people who've had COVID before, mm-hmm. the vaccine, even the first dose, mm-hmm. has a boosting effect on their immunity. Mm-hmm. And so that explains why there's the exaggerated symptoms mm-hmm. that COVID survivors have mm-hmm. when they get the first dose of the vaccine. So I usually counsel people who've had COVID before who are going to get their shots mm-hmm. that you may have more symptoms mm-hmm. than others mm-hmm. when you go for even your first shot, talk less of the second shot.
So
mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. that maybe in the future, mm-hmm. based on this data, again, this is very preliminary, you know, that maybe in the future, mm-hmm. it's possible that people who've had prior COVID could be fine with just a booster shot without mm-hmm. requiring to complete the series. Mm-hmm. But nobody's recommending that yet. Mm-hmm. But that's at least some of the early evidence we have.
That we have. You know, what is beginning to happen is some people are using the vaccine to realize that, oh my God, I had COVID and I didn't realize I had COVID.
Well, you can't do that reliably, right? Because you can't use the severity of symptoms mm-hmm. to determine that. Mm-hmm. I think you need a little more data. Mm-hmm. We have antibody tests that can help differentiate between if you have antibodies to the virus itself or you generate antibodies through having the vaccine. So we have tests that can discriminate, mm-hmm. but those are not routinely available in the clinical setting. Those are typically in research centers. Mm-hmm. So for now, don't make assumptions, even if you feel bad after the first vaccine. For now, mm-hmm. I would recommend everyone get the second shot.
All right, Lagos, we're about to take a break. This break is about a few minutes long. So just be patient, stay here, don't go away. And we'll take more of your questions as soon as we come back from the break. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I am Sandra Ezekwesili, and today I'm asking what you want to know about the COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccination is ongoing. Some of us have been vaccinated. Some people are waiting to be vaccinated. Some are saying they will still not get vaccinated, but whether we like it or not, the world is getting vaccinated. I started the show by telling you that 552 million people worldwide have been vaccinated. That's one out of 15 people on Earth. It's an impressive number. In Nigeria, 500,000 people have been vaccinated. In Lagos, more than 120,000 have been vaccinated. Ekiti, 10,000 have been vaccinated. Let's take that break. Don't go away. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. This is Nigeria Info.
99.3 Nigeria Info.
Your number one station for talk. Let's talk.
I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. It's 5:36. We've got Dr. Onyema Ogbuagu joining us on the show today. He is an associate professor at Yale University, and he is one of the scientists who worked on the trials for the Pfizer vaccine. And we are asking him all the things we want to know about the COVID-19 vaccines. Lagos, as you listen, go ahead and call, go ahead and ask your questions. Our numbers are 01465-7190. That's for women, 01465-7190. And then there's 0700-993-993-993. That number is for our male callers. What would you like to know? about vaccines. What would you like to know about vaccine development? Go ahead and give us a call and ask those questions. Now, Dr. Obuagwo, before I take a few calls, let's talk about criteria for vaccination. We saw many countries prioritize some groups to get the vaccine first. So, of course, you've got frontline workers, health workers. You've got the elderly. You've got people who have certain diseases. But now with these new variants, there's a growing anecdotal evidence that other populations have increased risk of hospitalization. We saw it in Eastern and Southern Africa during the second wave with younger people. So I have been wondering if there has to be a change, if there will be a change in prioritization rules.
So great. Observation, Sandra, and I do agree. The important message to get out here is because I think that part of the reason why some people have been a little careless around the public health measures like wearing a mask, social distancing, avoiding congregate settings is because there's this misconception that younger, both from middle age down to kids, are, you know, don't get very sick with the virus, so they can literally take that risk and do anything they want. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important to get that message out that, you know, even young and middle-aged people do die from COVID. Mm. Now, we do know that there's a huge difference, though, between the mortality or the death rates from older individuals. When you start to go beyond the age of 60, it's very clear. Mm. And actually, 70-year-olds die more than 60, 80-year-olds die even more than 70. So there's a clear gradient with age regards to mortality, but that does not mean that young middle-aged people don't get sick, don't get hospitalized, some critically ill, and some die, you know, and we've had kids with underlying conditions die as well. Now, but the reality is that if you think of what age group or what demographic or what subset of the population should we vaccinate to have the greatest impact on death from COVID-19, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think no matter what you look at, it remains that older individuals, right, are the people to prioritize for vaccination to protect against death. Mm. If your issue is to protect against disease transmission, you'll get a very different answer because, you know, sometimes it's younger people that tend to transmit the virus more. Mm. Okay, so the reality is if you want to have the greatest impact on transmission, you'll have a very different answer on what groups you should prioritize. So in some ways, I think we've done it the right way. Now, here's what vaccinations are starting to do. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see, Israel has reported it, UK and the US now, we're starting to see less older people come to the hospital sick with COVID. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that the hospitalizations and the admissions for COVID-19 are skewing younger because older people are coming in less. Mm-hmm. So what the vaccinations will do because of the way we prioritize older people is that it will become a less lethal disease. We're going to see much less people die from COVID because we protected the most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But the people I think that are lost in the middle somewhere are the young middle-aged people who have comorbid conditions or medical conditions that put them at risk for severe COVID. Right. That's the group that I think we need to prioritize after the wave of vaccinating the elderly. And of course, healthcare workers, even if they're, you know, because they have to provide care for COVID-19 patients and keep themselves and their families safe, it makes sense in every setting to make sure that we protect our healthcare workers. Every time there's a pandemic, healthcare workers take the brunt, right?
That's right.
We saw that with Ebola, we're seeing COVID-19, and that's unfortunate because in many of these settings, the number of healthcare workers we have are insufficient to meet the medical or health needs of the population. And then if we lose them where we don't have sufficient numbers, then you can imagine it has a further strain on the healthcare system. And don't forget that it's not just COVID-19 that we're fighting with, right?
Right. I mean,
you know, there's a Lassa fever outbreak in Nigeria.
That's right.
There's other infectious disease, HIV.
There's bird flu in Niger State as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and these also need the healthcare workers to also, and also the non-communicable diseases burdens, you know, hypertension, heart disease that our healthcare workers need to deal with. So protecting our healthcare workers should also be at the forefront.
Priority. Speaking of caution, we saw many countries, especially Europe, temporarily halt the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine. But of course, since then, they've resumed using the vaccine. Now, as you know, Doctor, AstraZeneca is a vaccine that is being used here in Nigeria for now. And so this news of suspension and blood clots, it really scared quite a few people here. In fact, my mom doesn't even know have been vaccinated yet because she kept warning me, ne, you are all I have. Ne, be cool. Don't do it. Ne. So could you give us some clarifications about what happened and some assurances about the safety of the vaccines?
Yeah, so first of all, a message to Nessandra. She made the right decision. So this one is not Negawana. This one is Wangawana, right? So for the AstraZeneca vaccine, the issue was, and you know, this is a lesson because I think the way we manage information is important.
Right.
And the reality is that the people who made the decisions in the most part as to halting the use of the vaccine were not regulators. Regulators are people who are best suited to look at data and make the most sense and to provide guidance as to, and right, when I mean regulators, like in the US is the FDA, in the Europe is the European Medicines Agency, the EMA, that provides, you know, guidance as to, you know, what, you know, we call it pharmacovigilance, like when something is out there, has a side effect risen to the level where the population should be concerned. So it wasn't people like that who know better who made those decisions. It's mostly government or public health officials who really just did a knee-jerk reaction without too much thought into it. So, you know, out of about 27 million doses, there were about 30 cases or so of people with two kinds of disorders. One was having low platelets, that's what helps the blood clot, and then people who, on the other hand, had clotting disorders. Okay. Now, first of all, the incidence or the rate at which that was occurring is no different, or even in some cases less than occurs in the general population.
That's right.
So that even the fact that it could be related to vaccine is unclear. But even if it were, the rate at which those events occur is so low, it's like 0.0006 or something like that of percent of people who received the vaccine who developed that
blood clots
disorder. So it's still being investigated. You know, there's some conditions that can both cause low platelets and clotting disorders as well. But the occurrence of that is so low. So again, I think that the link to the vaccine has not been established at all. The event rate is just so low. You know, you have a chance of being struck by lightning maybe at the same rate that you'd have that occur. So again, the benefits of the AstraZeneca vaccine far by orders of magnitude, definitely way in favor of receiving the vaccine than any perceived risks that haven't been substantiated yet.
We still have a lot of vaccine skepticism here in Nigeria about the vaccines. You know, you've, of course, been vaccinated months ago. You took your vaccine live on national TV. I took my vaccine last week. And I have to ask you what you can say to Nigerians who are scared about taking any of the vaccines?
Yeah, so it's really unfortunate, right, that you have a solution to a problem, right? And especially not just any kind of problem, but think about what COVID-19 has done to us. It's wrecked our social and communal lives. It's taken a toll mortality-wise in many parts of the world. We've lost friends, we've lost family, parents, grandparents, right? And we continue to be restricted from travel, kids going to school safely. There's mental health conditions that people are developing because of the social isolation. We're neglecting many other parts of healthcare, and we're going to pay for it later when we start to find conditions that when people present late with them because we didn't screen for them so early on. So the costs of this pandemic have been really high. The way we get out of this COVID-19 pandemic is through vaccination. And so, you know, the vaccines have been shown to be safe. They're very effective against people going to the hospital. And here's the sad part. So we're seeing that diseases do not know any borders or boundaries. So that any country in the world that doesn't control COVID-19, even when we've successfully controlled it in other parts of the world, that country can be a portal for resurgence or the pandemic reoccurring again, which is very unfortunate. So all of us have to work together. We're all in this together. We need to take the vaccines. Remember what vaccines have done for polio, for example, how those rates have gone down. Think about hepatitis shots that we give our kids and how that has prevented, you know, things like hepatitis B infection. Vaccines continue to play a great role in our lives. They protect us against infectious diseases. One of the reasons why life expectancy is as high as it is in many parts of the world is due to, a major part, is through vaccinations and how that protects us from diseases that have a chance of really decimating population. So same thing with COVID-19. Facebook is, let's avoid Dr. WhatsApp and nurse Facebook. You know, those are really very, poor sources of health information. Listen to the experts, listen to the public health officials.
What then happens when you have, what then do you do when you have doctors in Nigeria, nurses in Nigeria, who are also skeptics?
Yeah, so that's unfortunate. I think that, it's very clear that healthcare officials should be those trusted messengers for health information. And, even healthcare providers have their biases. You know, nurses and doctors, many times have their biases that sometimes overrules their scientific minds, unfortunately. But again, I think that the vast majority, those may be in the minority, but the vast majority of healthcare professionals and officials definitely do recommend, mention that the vaccine is safe. So listen to the vast majority of doctors.
All right.
Especially those of us on the front lines of the vaccine development process. You know, when we say the vaccine is safe and it's effective.
Okay. Lagos, let me take more of your calls. The number for women, 01465-7190. And the number for men, 0700-993-993-993. Again, 01465-7190 and 0700-993-993-993. Do you have questions for Dr. Obuagu about the COVID vaccine, so about vaccine development in general? Go ahead and give us a call. 99.3, hello.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for calling. Good evening.
Thank you. My name is Georgina, and I'd like to ask a few questions. Number one, I'm a bit concerned about how the pharmaceutical companies are indemnified from any harm that would come either now or later as a result of taking the vaccine. So that made me raise an eyebrow. Why would you indemnify the company from any harm? And then two, my understanding of a vaccine is that to take like trial of up to 10 years, because sometimes the effect is not going to come out till after 5 years or 6 years, not a 1 month thing or 2 month thing. How are we sure? I heard him talking and he was talking about how new strains, there's still some trials going on. And it sounds as if human beings are being used as guinea pigs. Why didn't we do all these trials for all this length of time first? Understanding the new strains before vaccinating people, especially as it has been proven not to be a death sentence. You know, COVID-19 has a lot of high infection rate, but it doesn't have a high death rate. So it's looking as if we're using a sledgehammer to kill a fly. And then this, the cost of COVID-19 we're talking about, are all self-inflicted. Shutting down our conditions, shutting down businesses, social distancing. They made those suggestions. We didn't have to go that route because the death rate is not as high as the hula baloo, you know. So these are the reasons why people are cynical, people are skeptical. I was taken aback when our own health minister was saying he signed an indemnity to indemnify AstraZeneca, the Indians, those that produce it, of any harm. You know, that's a bit suspicious.
All right. Thank you very much, Georgina, for calling. We're going to have Dr. Obuagu address the questions that you've raised. Doctor?
Okay. So first of all, thank you for your questions and let me dig right in. Okay. So first of all, indemnifying pharmaceutical companies. So remember that, these vaccines have been produced in response to a pandemic. And you alluded to many years for vaccine development. So let me ask you, if the rate at which the COVID-19 pandemic was raging, would you be willing to wait 4 or 5 years for a vaccine and think about just how much carnage would occur? I'm impressed by 2.8 million deaths worldwide. I don't know why even if the mortality rate is 1%, but if you apply that to a global population, you have millions of people dying who did not have to die. So I think even if the overall mortality rate is low percentage-wise, but the total absolute number of people who've died from COVID-19 who did not need to die is totally unacceptable for a disease. We did not have 4 or 5 years to keep studying a vaccine over time while people were dying. Okay. Now, that said, there were no shortcuts taken for the process. In fact, what I will tell you, having been part of the clinical trial process, is that it's not that things were sped up, they were done more efficiently. So we learned to do things more efficiently. We learned how to get things done quicker, not necessarily having to jeopardize safety. So I want to make that really clear. So that perception that things were rushed, we need more time. Majority of the side effects of vaccines occur early. And we had that experience with every other vaccine we've used. The side effects that people will have for vaccines happen early, so that what happens early is a good predictor of what's going to happen over the long term. So many of us do not expect that there'll be any surprises down the road. So because of the pace at which the vaccine trials were done, okay, that's why the indemnification is done. It's the same way when you have, as a physician, when you're offering a treatment to a patient, you should explain the risks and benefits to them, and doesn't mean that you as the physician necessarily have to assume risk for everything that you recommend for a patient. So it's a strategy to make sure that we don't disincentivize the pharmaceutical companies from, you know, supporting vaccine development if they so that they can become at risk. Now, what you need to be aware of is that the safeguard in the process are the regulators. So, for example, the European Medicines Association and the FDA in the US are the regulators. So they look at the data from the clinical trials and they issue an authorization only after things like manufacturing processes are verified, there's quality control of the batches of vaccines, there's safety records. We had to show 2 months of safety data for the Pfizer vaccine, for example, before the FDA even looked at the data that we submitted, okay, and to make sure that the efficacy numbers hold up. And even after the vaccines have been approved, there are systems in place to assess and monitor for side effects. We have what we call a vaccine adverse event monitoring system in the US. We're monitoring real world outcomes. And I got to tell you, the safety record is just stellar. Okay, so when you have a raging pandemic, it's not the time to slow walk vaccine studies and get them done over 4 or 5 years. We don't have that luxury. Things were not rushed. They were just done more effectively. Human beings are not guinea pigs. Before we did the large phase 3 trials, you typically go through the process. We do safety trials. So we use a few double-digit numbers, about 45 people. We use the vaccine in them first to ensure there's no safety signal. When we saw it's safe, we tested them in a couple hundred people to make sure that they provide immune response and also looked at safety again. Only when the vaccines passed through those phase 1 and 2 studies, that's when we did the 10,000s of studies in the phase 3. And we still did the 10,000s of people to look for safety again before they were authorized or approved for use. So those processes were done. We looked for the safety signals. And even before we did the human trials, there were also safety studies done in animals where you can even give them, you know, doses that are higher than in humans to also verify that they don't cause any side effects. So I am satisfied with the level of work that has been done prior to the authorization, that the vaccines are as safe as they are.
All right. And then she also talked about, the cost of the vaccine being human-made, man-made, you know, because, again, she said, she's Nigerian and we're sort of desensitized to death here. But, you know, she talks about, the death rates were low, so there was no need to lock down and shut down everywhere. Do you believe that?
Not at all. I think that, remember that one of the reasons why the death rates are even the way they are is because, you know, these public health interventions like mask wearing saved lives, physical distancing saves lives, and lockdowns when were needed, especially when there was an outbreak that was raging, save lives. Many of us were very concerned, for example, like Lagos Metropolis with how many, you know, tens of millions of people, right, in a small area. You can imagine just the impact an unfettered pandemic would have had in that setting. So again, you know, these public health measures work. They have come at a cost. And that's why we should actually be encouraging people to get vaccinated, because as soon as we can get rid of the pandemic, then some of these restrictions that are important and necessary, we can start to relax them and people can go on with their lives. Mm-hmm. So this is the typical course of a public health response to you know, a deadly pandemic, and I think that all the right steps have been done.
Dr. Onyema Obuagu, an associate professor at Yale University, thank you very much for joining us on Hard Facts today. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Sandra. Thanks for having me.
Lagos, that's all the time we have. Let me give you a chance to win 10,000 naira, shall we? We've got just 3 minutes to do it. But Credit Ville makes sure all the time that you get your money. So come in here and get your money.